Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network, sponsored by the Brain Injury Law Group, Attorney Gordon Johnson, www.tbilaw.com, 800-992-9447. To get automatic updates, join in tbisn.org. When Attorney Gordon Johnson speaks about recovery, he isn't talking about the amount of money a survivor gets from a lawsuit or settlement. He is talking about getting better from the brain injury. Find him on the web at tbilaw.com.
800-992-9447. Welcome to another edition of Brain Injury Radio Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, Fantastic Frank is in the house. Turn that curse into a gift. Fantastic Frank was trapped in a bar and carried out in a body bag, but he took action. And now he inspires others. Learn how you can go from flawed to fantastic today on the Fantastic Frank Radio Show. This is the Fantastic Frank Radio Show.
Hello there. This is the Fantastic Frank Radio Show. However, Fantastic Frank will not be here this evening. This is your regular Wednesday night host, Kim Justice, and I'm pinch hitting for Frank, who is off seeking his fortune in Vegas this week. He told me he's actually at a seminar, and I imagine he probably is, but pardon me, but I teased him a little bit because I'm sure he'll drop a few quarters in the slots between meetings, and so I told him I would step up tonight. Now, Keith Anthony was here a few minutes ago in the chat, and I apologize to him. I hope he comes back. He was talking to me, but I realized that I hadn't Skyped into the show yet. I had the studio opened and the chat open, and when I realized, you know, I hadn't been hearing the voice, you hosts out there will understand this. The listeners might not, but we have a little prompt that says, your show is scheduled to start in 5 minutes. And anyway, they count it down. It occurred to me that I wasn't hearing that. And so I looked, and I had not Skyped into the show. And so I did. And, oh, good, Keith Anthony, you're back. I was just explaining that I realized I had forgotten to Skype into the show. I thought I was ahead of the ball game by getting the studio and the chat opened. But when I didn't answer your question, it was because I was Skyping. And as soon as the connection was made, it said, your show is scheduled to start in 5, 4, 3, 2, boom. And we were on. So I apologize to Keith. I almost didn't make it tonight. I've got a screaming migraine and have had a challenging last 24 hours and I'm really tired and it's humid here and I've got a list of things, but in any case, tonight I called the show Roll the Dice for two obvious reasons. One would be that the regular host Frank is in Vegas, and the other is because that's about what we're going to do with the topic tonight, is roll the dice. I see that Les Paul is out shopping because he's not in the chat, but I see him on the phone line. So happy retail therapy, and we'll hope to see you in the chat in a little while. I've got him muted for a minute. I will unmute him, but I don't want him to drive and chat on the phone. And let's see, I will, good, thanks, Keith Anthony. What I wanted to do here, and then I'm going to unmute both, well, Keith Anthony is going to unmute himself because I can't see him. He's invisible in the studio with me, but that's good. And I'm going to well, let's see, Les doesn't have his hand up, so I'm not sure if he wants me to undo him. I had a topic I was planning on talking about tonight for Frank's show, but then, as often happens with me, something shiny caught my attention to the side, and it was just like a half an hour ago. And so I haven't had time to fully process it. And being the great minds, thank you, Keith Anthony, that Keith Anthony and Les Paul are, I thought perhaps they might help me ponder this quote. And I'm going to put it in the chat room right now. And let's see, Keith Anthony is closer to France since he's in London than I am here in Nebraska. But this a French guy, André Bergson, someone with a French accent might not butcher that quite as bad. But the quote is, "The eye sees only what the mind is prepared to comprehend." And Les Paul and Keith Anthony, thanks for being here. Welcome. I've got both of your mics unmuted for the moment. And I was thinking about this quote, "The eye sees only what the mind is prepared to comprehend." And I was thinking of a few different things, and then I'm going to toss it over to you. And if you guys have nothing to say, I'm going to switch to plan B, which was actually plan A, my first idea for a topic tonight. And I would probably transition that by throwing on a song. But this quote made me think of a couple different things, both tangible and less tangible, I guess. One of them is something really obvious, and I had read something about a lady who drove a school bus, and she said that when she was in training for driving this school bus, that one of the tips they gave is that a person in traffic can be checking left, checking right before they proceed, but that their expectation is to see a car more times than not a school bus. So for the bus driver to not necessarily count on the fact that the school bus registered with that person at the intersection who might just go ahead and pull out. I also read an example about we all once thought the world was flat, and there was a cute caricature of the flat world with the man standing on the end of it kind of teetering. And I got to thinking about, you know, those are some obvious, like I said, tangible ones. But I got to thinking about brain injury a little and the more intangible ones. And various, you know, I don't know what word we're choosing these days, disability, handicap, see, whatever that word is, you know, what the politically correct word is these days. But, you know, I remember when somebody put a mirror up in front of my face. I woke up in the hospital after my aneurysm, and I didn't know I had had a craniotomy, so I didn't know what a zipper head looked like, didn't know I had one. They had been protecting me from it, and of course I was pretty loopy that first couple of days, so I hadn't asked. My head just hurt, you know, but I wasn't reasoning properly. And a couple that I know, friends, snuck in. While my mom was away, she had been guarding her cub and not letting anyone in the door. And when Deb and Lou came in, their eyes got big as saucers, and they had this look of horror on their face. And I said, what's wrong? And she said, haven't you seen yourself yet? And I said, no. And she rifled around in her purse until she came up with her compact. She opened it up and she moved the mirror toward my face. And that was how I first saw my zipper head. And when she took it away, I pushed it away. I looked at it with curiosity, as if I was looking at a picture of a duck, something unrelated to me. And then I put my hand and I pushed it away. And I didn't look in another mirror, I don't think, for, God, a couple weeks or so. And part of it is that I wasn't ready to comprehend what had happened, what I had gone through, and that I had a zipper head. And last night, for those of you that listened to my show, and I won't belabor this, but it's kind of one of the things you can kind of see how my my mind was tracking when I heard this quote earlier, about an hour ago, and we were talking about perception, and that's what this quote is about, is perception. And last night, my guest, Al, and I were talking about the perception that we have of ourselves after we first become brain injured, and that's one of maybe a lack of confidence. Will anybody ever love me? Will I ever find myself of value if I can't do what I used to do? What's my purpose of even being here if I can't be who I used to be? And then that would be from the psychological standpoint, and then we discussed from the sociological standpoint the perception of the community and the way that they view people with visible handicaps. And it's sometimes like they're a three-headed monster, and they register fear. And we talked about the fact that that fear had something to do with different, with a person being different, and that difference making people feel uncomfortable. And so Al was talking about how we need to change the community's perception of people who have challenges and make it more of an acceptable known quantity than a scary unknown quantity. And then about an hour ago, I read, the eye sees only what the mind is prepared to comprehend. And obviously, right now, a lot of people's minds aren't ready to comprehend the plight of a person who's had any number of disabilities, but we're on Brain Injury Radio, so we'll talk about that. A lot of eyes can't see us. We've often said, can anybody hear us? But then the way that people look at us, they're not prepared to comprehend that concept of us being people first because we're different. And so I thought I would bounce it off you guys, this quote and the idea of perception and how the perception once was, how we think it might be changing, what we might be doing to help affect that change by being hosts on Brain Injury Radio and other activities we might be doing, like Les Paul has a laundry list a mile long of, as does Craig, in the advocacy and awareness areas and the promotion of independent living and so forth, is they are trying to get people's eyes prepared to comprehend the reality of brain injury and other forms of disability. So with that, since I do have the mics open, in fact, boys, if you can wait for just one moment and bear with me for 1 second, Keith Anthony, I'm gonna close you and Les down for just 1 second, because this topic also has to do with someone that may be on the telephone tonight. Area code 505, who do I have with me? Is this Ken?
Hello, Kim. Yeah, hello, Kim.
Hello.
I just got your email. I just came home from work, and it's been hot here today, so I came home and do something that I do quite often to take care of myself, which is take a nap. And so I got up and I saw that you had invited me to listen in on your show tonight, and I just called in, and here I am. So you have to excuse me if I'm a little bit fuzzy, because I'm still waking up.
It's okay. It's okay. Let me just tell the folks while you splash some water on your face there that the gentleman on the phone is Ken Collins. He's active in the independent living movement. Would you say that's a fair statement?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to look at it.
Okay. The reason I say it that way is that we have one of our hosts, we have two of our hosts here right now, but one of them works at Walton Options. Ha ha, I said it before you, Les Paul. Walton Options Independent Living Center in South Carolina. He's on I'm going to say it before you, Les Paul, Aiken County, South Carolina, apparently, which borders on Georgia. And he's very active, and Ken is very active down in the Southwest in New Mexico. And Ken, and then bear with me, Keith Anthony and Les Paul, I'm going to have you on in a minute. What Ken is saying here is that earlier in the day I dropped him a note about coming on to Brain Injury Radio. This is actually fantastic Friends Day nights, but tonight I'm pinch hitting for the regular Thursday host who is in Vegas, for Pete's sake, trying to win his fortune and going to a conference on brain injury. And so I'm here pinch hitting. And I was telling these guys before you came on, and you have a little to do with this, but I didn't use that example. I heard a quote an hour ago, so I prepared a lot for this. I actually had a few things prepared for tonight, and then I did extend the invitation earlier to Ken in an email about coming on the show. And as he's saying, he just got my message, and I appreciate him dialing in. So we might even shift our topic around a little bit more, which is interesting because I called this episode Rolling the Dice, both to honor Frank's trip to Vegas, and because that was kind of how the topic on the show was going to be tonight. But the quote that I read, Ken, was one by Henri Bergson, and it says, "The eye sees only what the mind is prepared to comprehend. The eyes see only what the mind is prepared to comprehend." And I was given some examples. You know, that quote really relates to perception. And I was talking about, and maybe, you know, you can weigh in on this along with the other guys that I'm going to unmute in just a minute, but I was talking about, you know, the politically correct word now, if it's a handicap, a disability, or do we have something we're liking better now for a word to describe a malady that challenges our life in a way that it was never challenged before. But what I was talking about is I gave an example with my zipper head when I had my craniotomy, and for the audience that was here, I won't go through the long way of it, but I didn't know about it because I was a little looped, just coming out of coma and not even knowing what happened yet. And a friend had gotten in the room and had this aghast look on her face. And I didn't know why, because my parents and my boyfriend and the doctors, they hadn't looked at me like I was something out of Friday the 13th. So, you know, when these friends looked at me like that, and she asked me if I had seen myself, and I said no, she put her compact mirror up to my face. And I looked at it as though I was looking at something unrelated, you know, a picture of a duck in a National Geographic. You know, I didn't connect it with me because it didn't look like me, and therefore it wasn't me. But what it was is that my eyes were looking at something that my mind wasn't ready to comprehend yet. And it took quite a while for me to come to that reality. So we were talking both about the tangible things, like at one time we all thought the world was flat, and you picture a globe that's been flattened out with a guy standing on the edge of it kind of teetering, and that was a tangible way that our eyes would only let us see what we were prepared to comprehend, and because we couldn't see round, we believed flat. And what it was a matter of was perception. And so if one person has an opinion that's different than another, it's not always a matter of right or wrong. A lot of times it's a matter of perception. And so since these things have been going through my mind a little bit over the last 24 hours, I brought that quote up because, like I said, I just heard it about an hour ago, and it kind of stuck in my mind, and I hadn't had time to process it yet, and I wish I would have gotten my nap in today, but I thought we'd talk for just a moment. I had asked the others if they wanted to comment on that quote, and now that you're here, perhaps we'll go on and talk about something that you and I started yesterday, which was a perception about the good and the bad, where I guess maybe you can help me to understand a little bit better if we were talking about the state of the independent living community, or more the kind of places that warehouse people more so than the community atmosphere, and maybe clarify a little bit of the misunderstanding I was having last night with some of the things you were trying to tell me, because I was kind of under the gun getting ready to do my own show. And then we didn't get a chance to catch up today because I was feeling road hard and put up wet and have been kind of having a headache and a neck ache all day. So I just swallowed a few Advil and came and plugged in the mic and was ready to step up to the bat again. But anyway, I appreciate you calling in. And again, in a couple of minutes, Les Paul and Keith Anthony, I'll unmute you. But I thought I'd give Ken the floor for a few minutes.
Well, I think, you know, perception, that's a real good word. You know, I was a little bit different, and I think that I didn't have a zipper. Like, I didn't have that awareness that something as drastic and as dramatic as a brain injury had happened to me. When I came to, I was standing about 6 inches in front of the mirror back in my folks' bathroom, and I came to just out of darkness, you know, through a fog. When I came to, I was picking these wires. My mouth was wired shut, and, you know, I didn't know. You know, maybe with you it was the same thing when you saw the zipper in your head, you know, that, wow, you know, what happened, you know, what happened to me? And I remember just standing there, and I had my bathrobe on, and I was in my folks' bathroom, but my mouth's wired shut, you know. What happened to you? And I stood back there asking myself that for, oh, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes. And I'd get up to the mirror and pick the wires, you know, and go, what? How'd your mouth get wired shut? And like I said, I knew that I was at home because I was in my folks' bathroom. And I knew my name was Ken. And I knew I played baseball.
Oh.
And that's all I knew. I didn't know anything more. I didn't know about home, or I didn't know about Ken, or I didn't know about baseball. All I really cared about was figuring out why my mouth was wired shut. And so after a while, I walked down the hallway, and my mom was coming down the hallway getting ready to go to work, and what happened to me? Why's my mouth wired shut? And she looked at me like this forlorn look of, well, you were in a snowmobile wreck at Summit Lake. And I said, what do you mean? I just got here from California. And it was like a breath of fresh air. she just, "You're back," you know, and I, "What? Back? What do you mean? What happened to me? Why is my mouth wired shut?" Because, I mean,
yeah.
I probably had asked her that 10,000 times, and even though she had just told me that I was in a snowmobile wreck by Summit Lake, the first comment was, "Well, what do you mean?" "Well, I just got here from California, but why is my mouth wired shut?" I'd already forgot about the snowmobile wreck at Summit Lake, and I couldn't remember that anyway. And so I guess I think a lot of what comes up for us is a lot of the stigma and the stereotypes that we had before our injuries. I think that has a lot to do with how we view a recovery, because I think sometimes those perceptions that we have about, you know, disability in general are based on a lot of stereotypes. I mean, how many times do we still hear it with the word retard? You know, the word handicap also is offensive to a lot of people, because the word handicap comes from the old European times when people with disabilities had to beg with a cap in hand, you see, and that's where that word comes from, is handicap. And that's why a lot of people, I know I'm one of those, whenever I hear people talk about handicap, I always educate them. You know, we can really say nothing and not educate people that we come in contact with. But to me, I think that it really is essential that we help people, the general public, whenever people use the word retard. You know, I really think it's up to us to help educate them and not do it in a, you know, "Well, rah, 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 kind of way. But, you know, did you know that that word is offensive to people? You know, I mean, I really think that as an advocate, that's what we have to do, you know, because I think a lot of those perceptions are based on, you know, just growing up. And that, you know, most of us, unless we're special ed teachers, we don't really work with kids in schools with disabilities, you know. So the rest of us that, you know, grew up, I'll be 63 in August. So, you know, in my age group, most all people with disabilities were off over in special ed, if they were in school at all. And so, you know, I think that's another one of the problems that we have when we talk about disability. And after our brain injuries, this is especially true, because our friends who we grew up with, they just don't know how to deal with change and how different we are. You know, I think that's one of the reasons I mentioned my baseball playing. When I was, I lived the high school dream. You know, I committed myself to, when I was 11 years old, I decided that I was going to be a professional baseball player. And so, and because I had talent that I could, you know, develop, I did that. I didn't go to parties. I didn't drink, didn't smoke, didn't do anything. I committed myself that's what I want to be when I grow up, as a professional baseball player. And as I grew, by the time I was a freshman, that's pretty much the same size I am now, except I was about 50 pounds lighter, but I could throw 90 miles an hour. So After going to a community college 1 year, I was drafted by the Milwaukee Brewers. I was a 10th round pick and signed in 1970, and did that and played. And so growing up, you know, I was everybody's friend. Boy, you know, Ken Collins, you know, I'd see people in the store, come over for dinner tonight, you know, we're, how you doing, you know, handshakes, pats on the back, arms, you know, hugs, and all the things that go along with, you know, being somebody. And I never could figure that out. You know, that was something that I didn't really, I could tell how people treated me different. And that, you know, when I first signed, the first couple years, it was cool. You know, the notoriety and people knowing you and, you know, always coming up to you and talking and, you know, how you doing and blah, blah, blah. And but after about the first couple years, it really got old because it was more like I was a piece of meat, you know, like I was there. And I'm not talking, you know, down to all, you know, any of my friends. You know, I'm sure that there's nobody in Oak Ridge, Oregon that's listening to this program because, I mean, they're all good people. But it's just part of society, you know. When it's, you know, you're a small town, you know, hero, you know, that just kind of goes along with the territory. It's like stuff that happens to us folks with brain injuries. It just goes along with the territory. That's kind of how I look at things. And so, anyway, after my brain injury on December 31st at 3 in the morning, 1976, everything changed, you know. I mean, everything changed. At first, you know, I guess that I had a lot of people come by the hospital. And for a short time, a month or so, people came by my house, and this is after, see, I've got about a month missing. I remember Christmas Eve, and then I don't remember anything until I woke up in front of that mirror in the last week in January of 77. So,
wow.
And so I remember, it's all kind of, I just remember pieces of, but I do remember how people did come by, you know, to see me. And but, you know, when you're at that, in those early years, there's a lot of, what was I just talking about? You know, because
right.
we get off on
right.
tangents, you know. And yeah. we can't remember, you know, what we were talking about. And
right.
so after you say that, you know, a few thousand times to people, you know, suddenly, man, they don't start coming around, you know. And that's one thing I noticed, that I would see the same people in the store, because the town that I'm from is about 3,000 people, you know. So, I mean, there's, you know, everybody
Small.
Knows everybody, and, you know, so. But I'd see the same people in the community, and literally, they would turn and go the other way. And so, when you're trying to deal with this new you, you know, I had the old me that was a baseball player and had friends and could do anything. And then, but this new me, you know, I wasn't quite so sure about who this new guy is.
Right.
And that's something that we, you know, I've heard stories over the years. That's a real similar experience that we share, is the loss, you know, and that's all part of that loss. I heard you last night talk about the loss, you know. I mean, there's loss on so many levels, you know, the loss of who you were and who you, you know, and there's a loss of your friends. I mean, people that I worked with, I've been working with people with brain injuries since 1983. And you know, just in the last 20 years have been involved in the independent living movement. And see, I think that I called in at one of the programs Les Paul called in too, and we were talking about the independent living movement and what we were talking, I think, because I think one of the things that I brought up was the peer support.
Right.
That's something that's just critical. And that is a major, it's a core area for independent living centers is peer support. And that's what, you know, one thing that's good to see that Craig is putting out there is a support, the peer support groups, because it's conversations like this that help us so we don't feel so alone, you know. I mean, there's lonely. This is one of the things I think that some of the professionals don't quite get yet, because I've seen different things written about loneliness. And that's true, you know, but it's more that we have this sense that we're alone because nobody understands us, you know. We look okay. Well, you know, some people, like for me, my left side was out for a while, so when I walked, I would walk with a limp, and I still do that when I get real tired, when it's late, you know, when I'm real tired, I'll notice that I've got a slight limp. So I guess, you know, that people can see, well, this case, something happened, but if we can talk and walk and chew gum, you know, we're set up in some ways when we don't think right, you know, which is really, that's part of our disability is processing, you know, processing
yeah.
information and memory and all that stuff. But, you know, it's, and it all comes down to that word perception, you know, and how we're perceived and how we perceive ourselves. And, you know, one of the things that I've noticed that's just real exciting is programs like this, like Talk Radio, TBI Radio. It just plays such a important role in breaking down the barriers of isolation for people, you know, because and the things that are going on in social media, on Facebook, there's a number of survivor, well, there's the TBI network, of course, but there's other survivor Facebook pages where people are sharing just really incredible information and support to each other. Because that, you know, I heard you last night talking about, so it was 17 years before you ever met another person with a brain injury. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
And I was the same way until 83. So from 77 to 83, because I would try to talk to people about, well, I'm different. See, but whenever you talk to people about that, I think that's also why folks kind of migrated away from me too, is because I tried to talk to them about what I was going through. And the only thing that they would, oh, Ken, you're fine. There's nothing wrong with you. You're fine. And I think that statement says a lot, because I wasn't talking about, man, there's something wrong with me. I'm just trying to talk about I'm different and, you know, help it. But the only way that I could express and explain how I felt different was talking about it, because that's what helped me understand. See, there's this an auditory. I'm more of an auditory learner, especially back in those days, because I had to hear my words. Because by hearing my words, that helped me process what I was saying to get to the point that I was trying to make. So,
right.
So, And I still do that. It's less now over 36 years because now I can get it up in my brain and kind of fumble around with it, with the thought, and figure it out in my head before it comes to my lips. See,
right.
Back in those days, it had to come out of my lips so I could hear the words, so I could figure it out. And so when I would try to talk to a friend about how different I was, how I felt, what I got over and over and over is, Ken, you're okay. There's, you know, you're fine. There's nothing wrong with you. And so after a while, you know, I just kind of, you know, went back in my shell and, you know, I could put up a good front. I mean, I can do that pretty easy. You know, I mean, I learned a lot of those skills, you know, as an athlete, you know, and as somebody that you're put in a position where you have to be out, you know, talking to, you know, groups, because when you're a baseball player, the baseball team comes into town and you go to the Chamber of Commerce and you talk about, I mean, it's just a different world, you know, but it allowed me to not be so nervous by talking, you know, in a public forum. But anyway, so here I was in the position where, you know, after a while when people, oh, Ken, you just don't say anything. And so then it wasn't until 1983 that I found out about this brain injury program that was opening up in Eugene, Oregon, that I applied for a position there and got it. And then that's when I started finding out about, oh, brain injury. Oh, okay. Oh,
is
that
light
why I can't remember?
Subject, huh?
Yeah, the light came on, you know, and just went, oh, wow, you know. Oh, okay, I'm not crazy. Like, those were the first thought, you know. Oh, wow, I'm not crazy, you know. And, you know, even that has some connotations now, you know, about, well, just, you know, we're talking about words, handicap, and I think crazy is another one of those things. But that's also comes back to my perception, you know, what I was understanding. And, but, you know, ever since that time, 83, you know, I've been on this mission, you know, to help other people with brain injuries so that, you know, they don't feel so alone. You know, when
right.
it comes right down to it, you know, that's what peer support and, you know, peer counseling does. It helps people, you know, get us that they're not alone. You know, there's nothing wrong with them, you know. It's part of our disability, you know. I mean,
right.
It's part of who we are, and then we just have to figure out strategies to deal with those situations, you know, that come up in our lives. And there's a lot of them, you know.
I want you to tell me about one of them, Ken. We had started talking a little bit. As you know, I didn't go through a rehab program mm-hmm. of any kind. My parents, I needed a month or 6 weeks of rehab, but it was mm-hmm. in my parents' head that they didn't want me to go to that environment around, quote-unquote, those people. Because if I got upset by seeing people worse than me, maybe it would hold me back. And instead, you know, and there may have been some half-assed merit to that, but on the other hand, it left me isolated and polarized for 17 years. But we were talking a little bit about, you know, in every business, whether it's the disability business or the banking business or the real estate business or the government for that matter, we've got our solid good players, and we've got some who don't play for the betterment of the people. They pay for, you know, the betterment of themselves. And in your journey, I understand that you became acquainted with both types of these facilities, and I was wondering, and then I'll bring Les Paul on in a little while and talk about that, but if you can tell me a little bit about, since I didn't have that experience in my background, what you notice, if you were going to define a quality rehab versus the ones that you've seen that have maybe not done right by people you've known, what would some of those differences be, and how would a person, would there even be a person who knew? Let's say my folks would have decided to put me into a rehab center for that amount of time. Obviously, they knew nothing about it, so they were going to have to take someone's recommendation. And that person with the recommendation, you know, might be a doctor, it might be a front desk gal in at the hospital, it might be somebody who's just heard the name of a place in the city that gets bantered around a lot, but they really don't know anything about the workings of the business. So I guess that was like a loaded lot of questions all at once, but I guess what I'm getting at is your experience with the good, the not so good, and is there any way we can protect ourselves by knowing which is which?
Well, those are great questions, and I'll do my best to try to shed some light on a real tricky subject. And a lot of it has to do, most of it has to do with money.
Doesn't it always?
Yeah.
Greed.
Well, greed, yeah, yeah. I mean, well, I guess the lust for money, you know, lust for money and power. So in 1983, I started working at this program, the Center for Neuroeducational Therapies in Eugene, and I wasn't trained. I was given the opportunity to work in one of the first houses, the first group home. It was a residential setting. And so in 1983, there were starting to be a large number of people that were surviving brain injuries. That's primarily because of there were more trauma units around the country. Now there's a ton of them, and now that's why there's so many people surviving. But so in 1983, there was starting to be more of us, and so something had to be done, you know, because after the acute setting, you know, after the hospital, and after some early rehab in the hospital, people had to be discharged. And, you know, a lot of this trauma technology came about from the Vietnam War. It started in the Korean War, and then by the time the Vietnam War was over in the early 70s, with that came the means for us to survive. Okay? And out of that came, suddenly there's a large number of these people that, you know, what are we going to do with them? Family members were forced to bring their sons and daughters, husbands and wives, aunts and uncles, grandpas and grandmas home because there was no assistance. And so that's really where head injury rehabilitation started happening. In 1980, the SPIVACs and a couple of business people got together Marty Spivak and Marilyn Spivak, and they started the National Head Injury Foundation around their kitchen table in their home, and because they had a daughter who had a head injury. Okay, so let's do something about this. And so they formed the National Head Injury Foundation. And so by 83, they were really looking at all these ways that programs, businesses could start up to solve the dilemma of what are we going to do with these people. And so head injury rehabilitation was invented. You get big money involved, and before too long, and like what we had shown in Eugene, that it could be done. A residential setting, hiring staff, you know, bringing in people, doing some rehabilitation, which is kind of still the unknown, you know, like what does that mean? I kind of like the word habilitation. I know in your conversations last night you were trying to talk, you know, you were talking about rehabilitation, what's the name?
Reinvention.
Reinvention, yeah, because that's what we're doing in some ways. We're reinventing ourselves. But anyway, I like the word habilitation.
That's a good
one. I was going to send you the definition for that in an email today, but I just never got around to it. But I think habilitation talks more about the process that we're going through after our brain injuries. And so in 83, I started working, and before too long, CNET was opening up several homes. Some of the big programs, the Brennick family got involved. They were in Boston. They had a chain of nursing homes. And so they created New Medico, which is a for-profit chain of head injury rehabilitation facilities. And they were opening up all across the country. California, they couldn't, and none of these programs opened up in Oregon, because in Oregon we have the waiver, as well as, well, Oregon was the first state in the country to develop the waiver system. Waivers
Yes.
are used to divert money from nursing homes to home and community-based services. And so Oregon had a good waiver system, and that's mainly because of the advocacy of people with disabilities. Oregon's a real proactive state, and so that's where People First started, was in Oregon. I know you talked about that last night. There weren't any of these facilities in Oregon. But yet I start hearing about that because I started moving up the ladder because of my ability, my recovery, you know. And back in those days, I was told to my face many times by professionals that we don't get any better after 2 years. That's about as good as you're going to get after 2 years, because we
right.
plateau. Okay?
I heard that too.
That came
yeah.
from Mariel Lazak. She did studies, and I thought it was interesting last night about Al Condolucci. You notice that he always talked about studies, study this, study that, and you know that's where he seemed to be getting most of his information, were because of studies. And don't, you know, studies are good, but they're not, they're based on a few people. They're not based on everyone. So these conclusions that are drawn, and this is what New Medical used to always do. They were always promoting their services by talking about the studies that they had conducted on 20 or 30 or 50 or like 100 people. I think that's the most people I ever heard one of these studies being done on. And so that was real questionable by us brain-injured folks, because by 1988, that's when I first started getting involved in 1985, I was a founding member of the Oregon Head Injury Foundation, and this is really when the National Head Injury Foundation really started taking off. It was around 84, 85. I mean, they were around, but all of a sudden there were these state chapters all over. And anyway, I was part of a group of people, large group of people in Oregon, to help form the Oregon Head Injury Foundation. That was in 85. And so we were, you know, talking about services, really the same thing that we're talking about today. Really, the same stuff we're talking about in 85, we're talking about in 2013. I mean, that's incredible. We're talking the same stuff, you know, the number. Anyway, so I digress. So in 88, that's the first time I went to a national conference. They paid my way, Oregon Head Injury Foundation, because at that time they were just starting to talk about developing a National Head Injury Foundation Survivors Council. Because up until that time, there were no people with brain injuries involved. They used to call it the three-legged stool. The National Head Injury Foundation was a three-legged stool. There were one leg was providers, one leg was family members, and the other leg was professionals. And so here in 88, I show up at Crystal City in Washington, D.C., and I'm just blown away. Well, like, where are the people with brain injuries? You know, well, they're over at the ice cream social, because, you know, those head injured people, they get irritable when there's too much stimulation, and they get angry, and all of a sudden I'm being confronted by all these stereotypes that we have to deal with. But it's coming from the organization, the leaders that are representing us. You know, and plus, everybody's got gold watches on. I mean, it looked like a mafia convention. That's what I thought it was, because it was just, you know, $1,000 suits and jewelry, and everybody was hobnobbing and you know, those iced sculptures, you know. I mean, it was just money. What's going on here, you know? And then, you know, seeing all these providers, and there was New Medico, the Greenery, NeuroCare, and they all had these big booths that, you know, where they were giving away all kinds of free stuff. That was really one of the best things about going to a National Head Injury Foundation, because all these providers were giving away stuff. And so, anyway, that's a whole other story. So, but that's what started my journey to seeing this and really questioning, you know, who is getting helped here? You know, who are these people, who's getting benefited from the tragedy of brain injury, you know? And it really didn't look like us, that we were getting the help. We looked like we were really, The only thing that we were helping was them make a ton of money. Because back in those days, they were charging from 12 to, you know, I heard as high at, from one family member who had money, their own private money that they were putting into this new medical program, $45,000 a month. So from 12 to, it usually went from 12 to about 18 grand a month is what they were charging. And I thought back then that that was obscene. I mean, it doesn't cost that much. I mean, where's the money going? It does cost that much. You know, consequently, it does cost that much in the hospital. Okay, that's about what it cost in the hospital today, is about $14,000 to $20,000 and up. But see, in the hospital, you're paying for doctors, nurses, speech therapists, occupational therapist, physical therapist, all those add-in costs. And what the industry did, the head injury industry did, was take those costs from the hospital and put it into the community setting and say, that's what it costs. And, you know, and so that's really what got me motivated, because this comes back to my baseball stuff. You know, I'm really at my best when my back's against the wall. And so instead of probably like most people, you know, I just throw my hands up in the air and say, man, this is too much, and walk away. Well, that's not how I operate, you know. I think that something has to be done about it. And so as time went on, by 1990, they had an election for the Head Injury Survivors Council. But before that, in 89, they had this, they funded this program, Operation Empowerment. They got a grant through the Moody Foundation and I think it's Corpus Christi, no, it's in some place, Moody Foundation. Anyway, they're a long-time family. They've been in brain injury. They operate TLC program. I think it's Corpus, but it's just that this is one of these brain injury moments. You know, I know the place, but I can't remember the name. Anyway.
Oh, well. Somewhere.
So, yeah. Down on the coast. And so Galveston. That's where it's at, Galveston. And so they flew a bunch of us in, so many from each state chapter, into Galveston so that we could become empowered. And as a part of this process, we identified who our oppressors were, but it gave us the opportunity to all get together and say, oh, okay. Well, because it was easy for us to see who the enemy was, which were these large for-profit providers that seemed to be making all the money off us, but yet we didn't have any say, we didn't have any nothing, you know. We were just forming, we had just started the process of forming the Survivors Council, and so we all got together. I think Al Condolucci was down there, as a matter of fact. Les Frieden, he's with TIR. That's the program that Gabby Giffords was in, her rehab program. Great program. Les, a great guy. So he was a part of that. Les comes over from the independent living movement. So we all got together, and that really helped us to organize. And so then by 1990, we had the election for officers. I was elected as vice president of the Survivors Council. And by then, I was... it wasn't just me. There was a number of people. By then, Lucy Gwynn had started This Brain Has a Mouth, kind of like the talk radio of the time. But Lucy had this Brain Has a Mouth. It was a week or a monthly magazine that talked a lot about, you know, discrimination and a lot of the things that his talk radio does. But it was a magazine. I mean, this is really a hybrid of This Brain. You are a hybrid of This Brain Has a Mouth. So we all started organizing, and one of the first things that we decided that had was a congressional investigation of the head injury rehab businesses. And Ted White of New York decided that was something that he could pursue. And before too long, the congressional investigation started. I provided testimony. There were about six of us that were invited to provide testimony to the committee. So we did that, and before too long, the FBI came in and raided New Medico and closed them down. This was about by 1992, 93. And really, I thought that the problem was solved. We get rid of the crooks, then the ship will right itself. People will see their evil ways, and everything will be better. Boy, was I wrong, you know, because what happened, I don't know if you've read or anything. Bloomfield, David Armstrong at Bloomfield News did a whole series of story on the Florida, the Florida Institute. The Florida Neurologic Institute on Rehabilitation, FINER. I don't know if they're still closed. I know that they were talking about bankruptcy, but what happened was Charles Brennick, he's the man that set up New Medico, his son, I can't think of his first name right now other than Dickhead Brennick, he opened up FINER. And so they carried on, FINER did, with the policy and the fraud and abuse that his dad had started. But that was what's so frustrating over all these years is the National Head Injury Foundation, they didn't support what we were doing, you know. I was on the board for 6 years. I thought that I could work on the inside to change things. And
yes. I wanted to ask you about that. By the way, don't want to interrupt. Don't lose your place.
Okay.
But one of our contingents in the chat from Florida says that Brannick is still open. So go on.
Wow. Yeah, wow. That's just too bad. But again, and that shows you the influence and the power that these people have. And I know it's because of the money that these, you know, back when we got the investigation on, I thought that 12 or 14 grand a month was obscene. Now these crooks are charging $850 to $1,000 a day, you know. And it looks like what they've wormed in on is workers' comp, you know, workers' comp, big settlements. That's what these crooks have really focused on. And they just moved over from the national. Anyway, but let me back up. So by 1995, 94, around there, I'd had enough of this. I have a brain injury, and you can only beat your head against the wall so many times before it starts affecting your brain injury. And that's all I felt like I was doing, you know, was just beating my head against the wall, because there was this incredible wall of denial and that doesn't happen, and what are we going to do? See, because it's like the you don't want to bite the hand that feeds you, you know? And so what the National Head Injury Foundation was supposed to be a 501c3 tax-exempt organization benefiting the needs of people with brain injuries. But by 1994, I mean, I would be in board meetings, and one time I brought my wife. You know, you were talking about relationships last night, and I've been married 3 times, all after my brain injury. So, and at the time when this was going on in 94, I was married to a nurse. We were married for 8 years. And I thought, well, you know, somebody had given me, you know, and all the time that I was going, I was on the board, they never paid my way one time to go to board meetings. I had to borrow from people to get enough money to pay my plane ticket. And then they would reimburse me when I got there. And you can only do that so many times, you know, in a town. And by then I was living in Eugene, and there were only a few people, because all the people I know are poor people on Medicaid and Social Security, you know. And I did know some people, a family that owned a medical supply company, and they lent me money 3 different times to go to board meetings. But, I mean, so that's part of beating your head against the wall thing, you know. And so by 1994, I just went, man, this is just not right. And so I saw by then that NHRF was more of a trade association than it was a legitimate 501c3 organization benefiting the needs of people with brain injury. It was benefiting the needs of the providers and professionals. So I made a call to IRS. This is just before I resigned from the board, and filed a complaint with IRS against NHIF because I said that they were a trade association. And so so the IRS came in, and then I resigned in protest because of this, and I resigned from NHIF, and IRS came in and did an audit, and then they became the Brain Injury Association of America, registered as a trade association. So, I mean, that was a victory, but it was pretty hollow, you know, because, see, I believe there are so many of these crooks, and when I say crooks, I mean, my definition of a crook is somebody that steals people's lives away. They steal their futures away. They steal their potential away. And that's what these crooks are doing, you know. The Finers and the Brennecks and the Brain Injury Associations of America, they're not helping anybody but themselves. And that's not right. So you have to excuse me, because sometimes I get worked up over this, because I see it every day, you know. I'm just fortunate that I put my time and my life into the independent living movement now, because that's where our dog can be in the fight right there. Because independent living centers are nonprofit. They're controlled by a board of directors in that specific area, and they care about people. They help people. They make it so that people can live in the community instead of these nursing homes, because that's what all those programs are. They're just resort nursing homes, you know. I'm not going to name names, you know. I don't want to get you or anybody in trouble, but the vast majority of any business that's in brain injury is one of those crooks that steals people's lives away. The only ones that aren't are independent living centers. Okay. So, I think I'm good right now. Do you have any questions?
Hello? Hey, Ken? Hello? Hello?
Hey, Les. What happened to Ken?
I don't know. I heard a dog squeak and then nothing. She might have had to take her dog out.
I'm right here. I'm sorry, you guys. I was just looking. Ken apparently finished what he had to say and hung up. I didn't.
Oh,
he's not in the chat room either, is he?
He never was in the chat. He asked
me if
I had any questions. What he ended by saying was he was getting himself agitated and did I have any questions? And then I said, I'll put Les Paul on because he's been holding and knows a lot about, you've talked to him.
Well, you must have had yourself on. All we heard was your dogs. And, you know, and the same reason Ken got into it or left it is the reason I got into it. And you know, and I hadn't known where near as, you know, hell, I haven't been around as long as he's been in it. And oh, geez, I can see why you'd want to get out of it because, you know, it hasn't changed, you know.
No, that's what I was saying. I know it's Brain Injury Radio, and I'm going to let Les Paul and you guys talk about the independent living, but the phenomena of what's being talked about, even if you name names and you're able to get rid of a few of them, there's always another contingent.
Another name right behind
it,
it seems.
Yeah.
You know, I don't recognize any of the names, you know, because. Yeah.
You know, look at the banking industry. Chase and Citibank own the world. Illuminati runs the country. I mean, there's boardrooms all over the country that have nothing to do with brain injury where the people on the board have gold cufflinks, a tan, and a sports car. So it's not unique to our brain injury society. It's a known quantity since the beginning of time is that there's the altruistic people and there's the fleecers. And yeah, I don't blame him or you from wanting to get out from under that. I do have a 111 call. Let me just see.
No, that's that guy's probably, well, you can
he's
try,
a
but do it in the bubble.
Don't do 111 because he's a troublemaker. He's
okay.
Do
him in the bubble. Do him in the bubble.
Keith,
do
is there a
the
way?
Bubble.
Do you know how to work the bubble, Keith?
Yes, I do. You
want
me to talk to him?
Please,
yeah,
do you just want to make sure it's
not...
What I'll do is I'm going to put the bubble on, then he can't hear us and he can't talk to us.
Well, no,
correct.
Go into the bubble with him and see if he'll talk to you. And ask if he wants to be on the show and who he is.
Well, I know
well,
who
I
he is.
Well, I just
want to
know if he can.
He's always calling in.
Well, I mine comes across 1111 if I use my Skype, too, in there. So it may
it
be
might
someone
be
else,
Ken.
Too.
That's what I was wondering. But that's okay. You guys talk a minute, and I'll go in the bubble and ask him. If it's
okay, perfect.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
But anyway, I get where Ken's coming from. I had no idea he was around that long. And oh, geez, yeah. And, you know, I thought that it was bad now. It's always been bad.
It has.
Yeah. Well, it's business. You know what it
well,
is?
I'll,
and there's
I'll,
another thing. I'm sorry, Les.
That's all right.
Paul. Keith,
there's
that,
Ken on the line.
Okay. Thank you. I didn't think he meant to hang up on us. Hang on just one minute. Oh, hi. Hi,
yeah.
Ken. I was sure
I
that
think
your
my
call
cheek,
dropped.
I think my cheek hit the button. I think that's what it was.
Oh, boy.
Okay. I understand. I didn't think you were going to drop your call in mid-sentence. We have technical difficulty all the time. But I did just unmute. I'm sorry. Les Paul, our Tuesday night host. You had asked if we had questions, and I know that you're staying up later than normal. So there you go. Les Paul, meet Ken.
Well, hi, Ken. It's so nice to meet you. You sound like you've been in a battlefield called Earth and doing it in the independent living movement for a long time.
Yeah.
And And I've been trying to explain, and I tell you, the independent living movement in a way, and I have to say you did a beautiful job today, tonight,
you.
I mean.
Thank you.
Well, I don't think people fully understand what an independent living center does, do they? You know, once you've worked in one, did you say 20 years for you?
Well, I've worked here at San Juan for 13.
Okay.
And but I was involved. I helped as a VISTA volunteer. You know, that's what I took a lot of my. I was a VISTA volunteer for 2 years, and my VISTA project was the Yule Horn, establishing the Yule Horn apartments, and that that apartment, that transitional living program, was based on independent living services.
Okay.
So I've been aware of independent living for a long time.
With me, it's been about 14 years since I first started being involved with it. And it was a life changer, a big life changer.
Oh, yeah.
And people still say, independent living, what is that, a nursing home? I said, oh,
yeah,
dear,
right,
I don't understand.
Right.
It's totally the opposite. It's nothing like a nursing home. And they said, well, can I come stay here? I said, no, you don't live here. It's non-residential.
Yeah, it's not a residential.
It's non-residential. It's people with disabilities employed working to help other people with disabilities have a life.
Right.
And it's so hard to get that simple statement across. But I tell you what, if we had a lot of the brain injury survivors around the world going and volunteering at independent living centers, that would open up new services for brain injuries. And it would not only expand the brain injury services with real survivors being the real blood of them, it would help the independent living center and the brain injury survivors all at the same time.
Yeah.
And we work a lot on goals. I know you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Goals.
Plans and
independent living plans.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been awesome listening to you tonight. I'm very proud to hear a lot of what you said. I was actually driving in a rainstorm, and Kim was probably laughing because it's raining again. It was thundering and lightning, and I was listening in my car while I was driving, and I got home right in time when she first said she was going to put me on, but then a lot of talking got going on, so I didn't get to get in until now. But if everybody listening doesn't go to your independent living center and say, hey, what do you have for brain injury services or whatever services?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to kick yourself one day and say, oh, my goodness, I missed out on something, well, such as the National Council on Independent Living, such as Billy Alton from, I can't say his agency, I just went blank with my memory, from the Rural Independent Living. I can't think of what it's called for some reason. I went blank. And he's been on my show before. But what you've been talking about is a lot of the things we talk about, and how it is a civil rights movement for people with disabilities founded off of what Dr. King taught.
Yeah.
And, wow, it's just so many. There are so many, and like you said, there's so many corrupt agencies. There are some very good ones, and you really have to be careful how you tread across them. Tomorrow is the Brain Injury Association of South Carolina, we're actually having a conference, and I'm going to it tomorrow, and I'm driving three people with me in my car. And so I'm going to see how that goes. And we have a pretty good association here in South Carolina, and always room for improvement, but we're going to have I heard there's over something like close to 300 people there already registered to come in.
Wow.
So power to the people is what I often say. Nice to talk to you. And I'll talk more if she wants or whatever.
Well, actually, if it's okay with you, I'm going to put you on hold for just a minute because I know you stay up a little later than some of the others. And Yes, Craig, I'm going to bring you on next because I know you're leaving early in the morning.
Yeah, I was going to say to both of you guys, I mean, all independent living centers, unfortunately, aren't created equal like brain injury associations as well. And Oregon, you know, at one point, at least they seemed, you know, a lot of things when I had my injury seemed to be good, but as I looked into them, they're now the Alliance down there. You know, they may have changed their name, but their services aren't changed. You know, it is about money.
Well, yeah, but Craig, that's not an independent living center. That's a brain injury association.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And Oregon,
and they're different. But you're right. I mean, every independent living center is different, and they are really. That's, and us being people with brain injuries, we're the new kids on the block. So what we have to do is go to those independent living centers and really demand services to meet our needs, because there are a lot of ILCs out there, independent living centers out there, that don't really provide services to people with brain injuries. I mean,
right.
I wish that there were, you know, in the perfect world there were. So, you know, don't let my words about, you know, promoting independent living as there yet, because it's not, you know. And so, because in Oregon, there's only Access Oregon in Portland. There's another independent living center down in Medford. I think there's one in Salem. There aren't a lot of independent living centers in Oregon. And that comes back to the waiver and the advocacy of people with disabilities, because the client employed provider program that's funded under Senior and Disabled Services Division provides attendant care. I've got dogs, a second.
I was going to say, what do you got, a pit bull match going on
out
there?
I got 10 of them.
Hey, knock it off.
So it really is up to us to advocate for services within the independent living centers. It is easier than the state associations, the Brain Injury Alliance, or the Brain Injury Association, because they all have their own independent boards. They're nonprofits, just like the Alliance and the Brain Injury Association. But what you don't have at the independent living center are these providers that have the power over the board. I heard in Washington, the Washington Brain Injury Association, they pay, like, their board members pay $20,000 to set on the board. Is that right?
Right.
You talk about self-interest. And if you have $20,000 to pitch out to set on this board that makes policies, well, if your $20,000 investment is going to, you know, it's going to influence, you know, what you're doing. You're going to want to
our state has the contract for resources and skills. And so I know that since, you know, they don't like talking to me, I've gotten one referral, one phone call. You know, not that I want more phone calls, but, you know.
Yeah.
It's insane. Yeah, I mean, doctors can't do that, but lawyers can, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. Well, and it's a lot of lawyers that sit on those boards anyway, you know, within the state associations and the Alliance. It's doctors and lawyers and whose bed's getting feathered there, you know? I mean, they're getting, it's marketing. I don't want to get into it. It's just
it's gone on since you. You know, I was listening to your story, and you know, my injury, and I've only been at it 8 years, and I'm aware. You know, I can see why people don't want to do this. I mean, with or without a brain injury. I mean,
right.
My God, it seems to be ever ending, and you know, they just, you know, there may be a couple of us, but until there's a lot of us, nothing's going to change.
Right. Well, and that's what your radio program I think has the potential to do is educate people and empower us so that we can, you know, in all the states that listen to, you know, Brain Injury Talk Radio, that, you know, we can become really aware of who the enemy is, you know. And
right.
Because you've got to know the enemy before you can fight them, you know.
It's hard to recognize them because they come out as your friend in the beginning. You know, you don't find out they're your enemy for a while.
Well, see, that's one thing I've learned over the years, Craig, but I still don't know. Well, it helps me so I don't get so burned out over beating my head. You know, it kind of stops me from beating my head against the wall, is that I realized years ago now that all that support that they were giving me was really just patronization. They're just patronizing me, you know. All that, that's great, you know, you're so blah, 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 so nice, and, you know, it's just, they're just patronizing, you know.
Can I say something in here real quick between the middle of you two? I went to a place, you know, with my lack of experience, I was told about a place here in town called QLI, Quality Living something or other, like QLI.org, I think. I went out, and it was a rehab center, and in the tour, as you say, I told them I had a radio show, and I wanted to come out and talk to them about worldwide free exposure. If they had, you know, good things they were doing they wanted to talk about, and I was impressed with the fact that it looked like a very high-ticket campus. It was set up campus-style.
And they gave me
a tour, and only of not the building up on the hill that had the people warehoused, but the people who were not as bad off that were in their art class and their music class and sitting around the snack bar area and shooting pool, and it looked like an infomercial for Atlantis or something, you know, while it was going on. And then they brought me into the conference room and triple teamed me with their executives. I told them about the show, and they wanted to know how many listeners, and I gave them a number of listeners, and an impressive number of listeners, and they started stonewalling. They were impressed with the number of potential listeners that could be hearing what they had to say, but they started stonewalling with they would talk about it more and then get back to me. And as we were walking out, one of their claims to fame is that rather than being, you know, the VA-looking, smelling nursing home that you guys are talking about, they only have people under age 65. They claim they're one of the only places in the country that has a facility of their kind with people only under age 65 and in this community setting preparing them to go out, and that people from all over the world come and stay there. So I innocently say, and how are you funded? And they're funded, of course they are, by the government and by business, you know, big business, and meaning the insurance company. So insurance company and government were funding it. So then I asked them, I say, you know, 17 years ago when I had my deal, I didn't get any of this help, these rehabs that you've got going on. If a person like me were to come to you today who hadn't been through the first big ticket part of your program to be called one of your alumni, would I be able to get help from you? And they said no.
Well, unless you paid, unless you got whatever their rate is, you know, if you could afford it, you know.
I guess while they were looking down their nose at me, maybe they were just taking for granted maybe that I couldn't afford it, which would also be another poor mistake on their part. But anyway, where I'll leave that is I did invite them to be on the show, and from the sales pitch I got, and I got a long background in sales, you'd think they'd be wanting to scream it from the rooftop, but I've never heard back from them.
We don't do them any good. Before my injury, that's what I did was residential services for DD. And, you know, in Washington we have a great DD people that are on a core waiver.
Right.
You know, after my injury, I started looking at it, you know, and they have beautiful houses. So you know what? We built those beautiful houses on their money, on their spend down, because, you know, you can have only so much. You know, and if you ask one of them, they didn't want new carpet. They didn't, you know, they wouldn't have wanted what was bought to make the image look good.
Right.
They're still institutions in the community is what they end up being.
Right.
And in the hospital, even though, you know, I wasn't a bad guy, but, you know, I fought to help start the first respectful language. And it's not that I think that the words are bad. I think the perception is what has to change. And it started with words. But Ed Roberts, the reason I got into this, about a year before he died, he reached out, you know, and he says, you know, he knew I wanted to be dead. I didn't want to live like I was living. You know, I was afraid I was going to end up in one of the places I built or designed. I was. I thought, damn. And so he goes, you know, and that's the problem, Craig. He goes, too much services. Nobody's hungry enough to do it on their own anymore. And
That's right. No, that's right. Yeah. It's apathy. I think you hit it right on the head, Craig.
And they don't give us enough to be successful or happy. They just give us enough to be miserably get by is what they do to people.
Well, it's maintenance. It's maintenance. See, that's the thing that and people, I don't know, they just, if they're in crisis, they want to do something about it. But then once that crisis is gone, the motivation to continue on and make it better for everybody. That's where the problem is.
Our money's gone after a couple of years. You know, our big money's in the first couple of years. And then we're in poverty the rest of our lives.
I still think these people, from a business standpoint, though, if one of their claims to fame is you don't have to go to a horrid nursing home to rehab, but you can rehab in this clean, shiny new place. I mean, you wouldn't believe the people from here in the Midwest, like, say, alcohol treatment. You can trip on 50 centers like that, but for some reason there's something special about going to Betty Ford or Hazleton. And that's the kind of place this place put itself up as.
Right. See, they get referrals, though, and that's government referrals, so they don't need you. They don't need me. I mean, they have the government, and you have to change the system in order to change them.
So my final question to them was, so you don't have any desire to address the people that you're working in the industry of, except for your clients. Is that correct? The answer is, you know, I've got no answer. That's how long we've been doing this, about 10 months, Craig. I think I went and saw them right away. Shiny as a new penny. I would have thought they would have wanted to really recruit people from all over the country to come to Club Brain Med.
They look good. The problem is that the staff that they typically have, you wouldn't let watch your dogs for the weekend, let alone somebody, a human being that you care about. And all the money goes to the administration. I mean, you look at these people, they're driving Hummers and Corvettes and Mercedes. And here the staff can't afford to feed their family. And when the staff get a better job, they're gone. And you can't blame them.
Yeah. Well, see, but that's part of their plan, though, their business plan. They don't want, because I've seen the same thing, Craig, with programs, because people aren't trained. People are just given a job description, you go do it, and after, you know, a few months, or maybe if they're lucky to last a year, you know, they'll stay. But see, these companies, they don't want employees that are getting, well, one, they don't want smart employees that can think, you know, because if you think, then you can see what's going on. And, you know, for people that are new to this, because that's what I've seen over the years. I've seen so many good people, good-hearted people that want to do the right thing, but then they get into it. And one, this work is really hard. It's not easy, you know, dealing with us brain-injured folks. When we're at that, in those early phases, well, and even you know, some folks that have been brain injured for a long time with a severe brain injury, we're hard to deal with, you know. And so unless you are really trained to, but see, training costs money. And they're not going to spend money on training because they want those employees that are working in those facilities to leave after a short time. Because, one, they don't have to pay them more if they're not going to be around. So their bottom line is protected, and it's a big bottom line. And so, but most importantly, they don't want people sticking around because most people are not like us, okay? They're not going to dig their heels in and say, hey, this isn't right. I mean, somebody's got to do something about this, you know? I mean, we're like the few, okay? But I really think by talking like what we're talking about now, I really believe that we can garner our forces around the country and really do something about it, you know. I believe that with my heart, wholeheartedly, because I've seen people, suddenly the light goes on, and they go, oh, well, that's not right. Well, if, you know, and if in Washington they're doing this, well, in Oregon, wait, well, why don't we do, you know, in New Mexico, you know, Georgia, you know, we're around, and we can shed the light on these crooks, you know, because that's the thing about germs, you know, especially cockroaches. You ever notice how cockroaches are? You put the light on them, and man, they scurry off. Well, that's what I see a lot in this brain injury industry. They're just a bunch of cockroaches.
But then they come back, right? Others pop up in their place.
Well, you're right. You know, and it sounds like this place that you're talking about is just another new medico, you know. It might be part. I bet if you looked into their board, they might be a part of a larger corporation or even an insurance company. See, that's the thing. Some of these insurance companies are just as corrupt as anybody else.
Well, that's,
you know,
yeah, I was going to say.
The collusion
banking
that goes on between insurance companies and insurance companies and these facilities. You know, they're just taking money. They're just taking money out of one hand and putting in another, but it's the same. It's the same body, you know.
Well, and I wouldn't have a doubt if what you're saying isn't true. You know, imagine the double shun of having no support at the beginning of my journey in 95, none 17 years later. Then I find this shiny palace. I have insurance. I also have money. I could have paid for some treatment, but they wouldn't take me because I was one of their alumni. Now, I'm one of the brain injured out in the community, but because I hadn't gone through their whole program, even though I had cash or insurance, I wasn't in the frat house.
Yeah.
And so, once again,
I'm out in
the dust going, can anybody hear me? Sound familiar?
Yeah, and that's a scary place, you know. But, you know, for those of us that aren't afraid to take the path, you know, less traveled, you know, because we have to. If we're going to, you know, people talk about making this world a better place, and I really think that that's what a lot of people want to do, you know. And hopefully there's some people that are working in these facilities that are listening to this radio program, and you know, they'll decide to come on board, you know, and join the fight, you know. But I mean, it's an uphill battle there because, you know, they're afraid of losing their jobs, and so you know, but
movement,
but we have to keep doing
small,
this.
But it
we
grows.
Have to keep doing it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I'm glad that you and I, and there's still some a couple of questions here, but I'm glad that you and I were able to revisit. You talked about brain-injured people being difficult, and we were both difficult yesterday about, we were really saying the same thing. We had a different perception. I was caught between a rock and a hard place and had no idea. I just knew I wasn't the enemy, and I felt like was being treated like I just walked out of QLI, you know? I'm like, wait a minute. I didn't know. But I'm learning, and I appreciate that we could work through this over the last 24 hours, and that you came on the show tonight, and you've been as you have been. So, Craig, do you mind if I let another caller on?
Go for it.
Okay. Area code 763, who do we have here?
This is your friend Matt calling in. How is everybody this evening?
Pretty good, Matt. We're kind of in an ongoing, many years long debate about care facilities. Did you have to go to one after your accident?
I was in the hospital and I left there and I went into, I had to get moved because all my money's got moved, used from the insurance to another cheaper hospital. And then when I went to high school, because I was a senior in high school, then I had to do tutors and then I did some nursing home kind of thing, therapy. And tomorrow, it will be 17 years from my car wreck, so it's an anniversary.
Congratulations, Matt.
Yeah. So tomorrow, July 12th, is 17 years. So, you know
how
it is.
Do you feel squeamish ever about times around your anniversaries? I mean, it does take you back to a place that was unpleasant.
That's why I called in last night. I was trying to get on, and tonight too. With some like-minded people, some survivors and some people doing this deal, some support, you know, stuff like that. That's why I called tonight. I'm not really sad. I'm just thinking, you know, and then at this other program, I just spoke the other day, so I was reflecting about that too. Yeah, I'm glad to be a part of this tonight, though. The facilities, I was listening for a while, you know. I don't have a lot of to say about facilities. My mom works at a place, and she gets underpaid. They cut her pay $5 an hour when they changed ownership, and I wish that she's a great worker, and she does all kinds of good work. She's a great woman, great mother, and she's very loving. And all these other people, they're calling into work, and my mom's picking up doubles and double shifts, working many hours of overtime, and they just treat her like she's disposable or something. It's really sad, you know.
That is sad. When you have a good worker, you should really capitalize on that. It's worth the investment if your if your intent is true.
Yeah, she has 25 years experience or something, and it's really sad.
Yeah. Well, and that's this business model. It really goes. They don't want your mom to be around. Because they don't value her knowledge and experience and know-how. That's what's so distressing about, this corporate America, because I think it's kind of the corporate business model that is going on, Just a little side note. Yeah, it, every year, see, since my brain injury was on December the 31st, like New Year's, there were so many New Year's that I just, because every year it was a reminder. I was always kind of, you know, like what you were saying earlier, Matt, about, you know, this is your anniversary, and it really is a time of reflection and all that thing. But after about 25 years, it really, 20 years, 25 years, by the time 25 years rolled around, and that's when I started dreaming again. To where I, because when I slept at night, I never dreamt. But it seemed like after about around that time, 20 to 25 years out, it really became. Like I would start thinking about my brain injury and my wreck about. It used to be, you know, like a month before. In the early years, I would think about it all the time. But it, over time, you know, that's the old thing about brain injury. Time does heal all, you know. But I just wanted to let you know that after about, you know, 25 years around there, it just become less of a importance in my life, and then I could, you know, it just didn't have that significance anymore.
You know, I think it moves 13, quicker.
Yeah.
It moves quicker as you go, because it's 17 years,
yeah.
And Matt, I understand, and I'm glad. One of the reasons for me for being here and having these shows is just this, for people who need support.
Uh-huh.
You know, out in the community, and I know that anniversaries can be a challenging time for people. Now, you know, mine was January 9th, and so you've got the cold, icy, dirty snow in Omaha. You know how about that?
Yeah.
How that is in Minnesota, right? So, when that crisp, almost snap cold is going on out there, and it creeps on to January 9th, and you're right, it does lessen in time, Ken. Sometimes I even let the 9th go by before it registers, but it isn't gone, because it'll either be on the 9th or right around there that I'll start to have this feeling of free-floating anxiety or a feeling of dis-ease.
Yeah.
And it takes me back to a place where I was powerless. Now, to be honest with you, I'm a woman. You're not going to find this hard to believe, but I can be kind of a control freak. That is the epitome of a lack of control. The politics of what you guys are talking about and the fate of our lives and deaths facing our mortality is a daunting experience. And so I know there's people out there that feel this vulnerability again around the time of their anniversaries. And that's why I've always said, you know, we can tell the truth. We can inform, talk about current issues so we can help the movement move on. But I like helping a member at a time who's in that place. I spent such a long time, and what we all bring, one of the things Craig did that was brilliant, although it ticks me off at him sometimes when I'm not getting my way, is, you know, when he picked the hosts, he picked a good mix of people that were all bringing a different background to the table. And in the beginning, there was some finger pointing about what backgrounds belonged on the table and what didn't. So, you know, when you said brain injury, people can be difficult to deal with, not only out in the gen pop, but amongst each other sometimes,
know?
Yeah. And, but I think it just takes continuing to work on it and to always remember we're pulling on the same oar. And one of the ways we do that, to me, is by being here for someone like Matt, and we can stop a heated debate that's gone on for 60 years. It's going to go on for another 40 years. We're going to try to change it a person at a time. But tonight, we can make Matt feel better.
Yeah.
Supported.
Yeah.
Not alone.
Yeah.
Yeah, and thank you. You are. This, I agree with you that time does heal, and it's not as, like you said early on, we think about it daily, and then it just lessens. It is something where it's came and gone, and you know, because I try to stay busy, and then I'll remember, oh yeah, it's the anniversary today, and that happened once or twice, I remember. But for this one, I was 17 years old when it happened to me, and this is 17 years later, so I'm like reflecting like, on what. Like, I was dead for 9 minutes, you know, and I was joking, you know, that I'm 17 again, you know. Anyway.
Well, Matt, we're going to have to call the usual host of this show, Fantastic Frank. He's down in Vegas, and maybe 17 will be a lucky number. You know,
there you go.
I had my brain surgery. The incident happened January 9th, but I had my craniotomy on Friday the 13th of January, then later that same year got married Friday the 13th of October. Now, you can look at that two ways. Either we want to bet on that number or we don't, but it did turn out to be lucky because the first one saved my life, as it did yours. And the second one means that we're still here, closer to what we're supposed to be doing, you know, closer to our destiny and understanding that we've gotten at least a second chance at living life, which is a lot more than a lot of people get.
Yeah, that's right. Well, and the information that we have to share can really help a lot of people, you know.
Now, are you talking about like shows like this or to independent centers? I've got Les Paul unmuted to you and Ken, where you work.
Where can
a person go that would, I guess what, my doctor sent me to a shrink for it, and I suppose you can go to an unrelated support group, maybe get lucky enough to find a brain support group, but, you know, where else do you go where you're able to talk? Like you said, peer-to-peer support, which I want to do just a quick plug. I want to type in our site, Craig's other endeavor now, He Who Bites Off So Much to Chew, is the number 4PEER11.org. And ultimately, this is going to be a hotline, like a 24-hour hotline that's peer-to-peer support. We're looking for volunteers. I think they've got about 10, 12 hours a day covered. It's been a while since I've checked in, but they're only looking for a commitment of 4 hours a month. So if there's anyone out in the audience who wants to feel a little more sense of purpose, reach out to other survivors, be of service, or if you need that service yourself, by all means, go to 4peer11.org and look around, and you can see how the hotline is progressing and decide if you need to call it, join it as a volunteer, or both. And also, you'll find information on the new medical ID card where they can swipe your medical records on a driver's license size card like they swipe your debit card at the bank, and that was another brainchild of Craig that he's worked really hard on. So, you know, things might seem in some ways like they haven't changed a lot in the last 25 years. At the same time, it hasn't changed as quickly as we would like, for sure. But I think the wheels move in a little bit. And right now, that smaller percentage.
Hey, Kim, can I say something on that real quick?
Please.
My phone made that. Well, the card wasn't necessarily to have people's medical records on there, which they can if they want. The card was to have people's symptoms so that when they're being maybe accosted by an officer rather than getting beat up and put in an institution somewhere, that they can accommodate the symptoms that they may be having. I can't tell, you know, up here, Otto Zim, because of his incidences that happened, and he ended up getting tased to death because of a symptom rather than any crime or anything.
But it is a card that has your pertinent information that people can see, that is an ID, and it's rather than a piece of paper that people have had, it's an actual PVC card with information. If people want to put their medical records on, they can if that's pertinent, but it's to protect us and accommodate us rather than to share our records. So it's whatever you need to protect yourself.
Good.
Can I tell a quick story?
Yeah, thank you for adding that. Yes.
I was pulled over. I was about 2 years. I was after my accident, and the police pulled me over, and they said, maybe 3 years. And he said, I was a little slower then, and they said, have you been drinking? And I said, no. And then they said, well, what's wrong with you then? And they were, like, being really rude and mean to me. And I'm like, nothing. People actually gotten hurt from police officers because they didn't understand what was wrong with our drivers. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, yeah.
We've actually got a host.
Right, and see, that information is right there for them to look out for that. Look, be aware of that. And that way, when the police officers see that information on the digital ID, they it doesn't mean they're still not going to harass you, but you have a better chance of getting accommodated rather than harassed.
Yeah, we have those same type. Well, it's not the, it's a card. It's an ID card that we give out to folks with brain injuries, and on the front it just has just a little statement about what a brain injury is, and then on the back people can write their name, address, and telephone number, and then it's got a contact number for the Brain Injury Association. But now there isn't one. But those cards, I've given those cards out here to people, because they are real useful in cases at those times when people are pulled over or even walking. I mean, I still have balance problems, and if I turn too fast, you know, and I'm not thinking about it, all it looks like I'm staggering. And and here in Gallup, man, there's a lot of drunks. I mean, this is another world here where I live. And I've given out those cards to brain injured folks, and they've been real beneficial whenever they've dealt with the police, because the police only see a symptom, and that symptom with slurred speech and slow processing, that's a sure sign of that you've been drinking. But you show them that card, and then they go, oh, okay. But see, that also takes a lot. I've done a lot of advocacy here over the last 10 years, meeting with the chief of police, meeting with the sheriff, you know, to where the city council, the mayor, the county commissioners, when people see me, Ken Collins, you know, they know brain injury. And so, you know, there's having those cards, but there's also that other part where you're taking, you know, you're meeting with the police departments to where you're sensitizing them about brain injury so that they look at things just a little bit differently, you know. But those cards are really are incredible, what they can do to help people with brain injuries.
And on that card, what I did is it's actually, I learned about the card. It's funny you say that, from we worked with one of your universities, and there was a thing that was called Every 21 Seconds. I don't know if you're familiar with that movie. It's done out of Albuquerque.
Yeah.
And we used that card for a while, but it was just a business card. And so Tommy Manning had that card. The cop threw it down, beat him up, and, you know, and disappeared.
Well, that's right.
And so we made this one actual. It looks just like a driver's license.
Oh,
and,
good. Yeah,
and
good.
Matter of fact, it's a manufactured card rather than that piece of paper. And
It looks, it's just like a business card. You're right. I mean, it looks like something that somebody could do, but, you know,
this one is encrypted, and it has state seal on it, and we do. But it's not a get it out of jail free card. If you guys are listening out there, it doesn't keep you out of jail.
That's right. Yeah. No, that's right. That's what I've had to tell my folks here is that, look, this is not a get out of free jail card because mm-hmm. if you've been drinking, you know, you're going to go to jail, you know. Sometimes
right.
it works.
I'm glad you clarified that, Craig, because with the card I was thinking in terms of, unless Paul would be too, you know, about the metal we have in our head and the fact that it would get sucked out of our head if we were stuck in an MRI machine. And so,
right, and see, that's pertinent of information for you.
Right.
Yeah.
You can put that kind of stuff on cards. But then
yeah.
we have another host, Ken and Matt, just so you know, that, you know, he was driving and appeared to be driving a little erratically and then looked like he was staggering because he wasn't able to walk due to his injury and a surgery
mm-hmm.
he had,
mm-hmm.
and then probably got a little lippy after the cop did, and there was another one of those knockdown incidences. And you're right, Craig, and thanks for bringing that up as I'm promoting this card, is that it, you know, symptoms like that are listed too. So, and you guys say it's not a get out of jail free card, but at least it is a notice. You know, you're serving notice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And our other option is to have it on the regular driver's license, but I refuse to give the police that information pulling me over because they're going to come out with their hand on their gun until they can actually know what they're doing.
Yeah,
with.
No,
we
that's
have a lot
right.
of training
that's
to
right.
go to do.
Yeah, I think
you
did it right because I asked, my cousin's a cop, I asked them if they get trained about brain injury at all, and no, they don't. They're understaffed driving 50-year-old police cars. You know, the crooks are out there with M47s, and they got their 38. You know, no, they haven't been through that kind of training, so I think it's good that the card is a really good idea if there's symptoms like that, that at least you're serving notice. If it does wind up going, you know, to a court situation, again, it's not a free pass. If you're doing something wrong, you're doing something wrong, you know. But if you're not doing something wrong and somebody had a bad perception, which is the word we opened the show with, you know, an officer had a different perception than what the reality was, then having served that notice, I think, would be helpful in a litigation circumstance and for your own protection on the spot, for Pete's sake.
Right. And the PDF 147, which is a barcode we use, is only used by a few people, like the TSA, the FBI, CIA, police departments. And so, you know, we are licensed to use it. And as well, on the other side, there's a QR code. And as, for those of you guys who know QR codes, you can literally have that go to a website and you can update your own information as you need it.
Awesome.
Wow,
awesome.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah, see, that's what happens when I stick on my own show, Ken. I don't get all of the details of stuff, but I remember the big picture. So these guys paint in the dots for me, which is why it's great to have a team, you know, and it's all working together
instead of against each other. And Kim, what I can do is I've got sensitivity training information for police officers that I picked up from a group down in Eugene. They had, and it's really for folks with mental illness. But there's a lot of times when homeless and mental illness or folks with any kind of psychiatric disability, they have a lot of run-ins with the law. But there's a lot of training material that what I'll do is I'll send you this tomorrow. And if any of the listeners out there want to contact you to get it, then maybe, you know, you could send it to them because it really is up to us. And that's something that I found really beneficial to law enforcement is to go and talk to them. You know, talk to them about brain injury and training and just these issues right here. You know, like I would think that card, by taking that card, and, you know, it really helps law enforcement to have this kind of information. And they really are willing and open to you know, getting it because really they don't like to kill people, you know. But, and And that's what happens, you know. I mean, they got the guns, and if somebody, like, you know, gets angry, or if they see, you know, somebody that's having a bad day, and if they feel threatened, you know, they'll take it into their hands. And that's what I've seen useful with these cards, because one of the first things that happens with law enforcement is they slam you to the ground, and they beat you on the head, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't need any more of that, you know. And that's what I've found is like the opening line, you know, when I've talked to the chiefs and captains and other people, and both at the state level too. I'm in good contact with a major at the state police in Santa Fe, and I shared a lot of information with him. But it's useful information that they will, you know, gladly take, and by doing that, it helps to educate them about brain injury by becoming more sensitive. Then really, when they look at us as somebody with a brain injury that's wanting to help, they look at us in a different light. That's what I've noticed over the years. And so they're less fearful about somebody with a brain injury. See, because that's one thing the industry's done really well is talk about all this, our stigma, you know, about how we get angry and we're out of control. And
forgive me, but besides just police, I think that the whole world needs to understand brain injuries a little better.
Well, I think that helps, you know, to start with the police officers, like you said, and educate them about what's going on. Because the fear on the inverse, Ken, is that we've got a lot of veterans with PTSD coming back right now.
And that's what I use, too. Yeah, I use that, too.
It might not just be the cops, you know, that are acting out and pushed in a corner you know, it could be one of our veterans.
Does anybody know if the teachers are getting... There are teachers getting extra knowledge about brain injuries. When I was in high school, everybody was blind, and I know that was 17 years ago, and it's come a long way since then.
Yeah.
But are they getting more knowledge to help children when they get these brain injuries at 16, 17, 18?
Yes, some. It just depends on what kind of... You know, here in Gallup, I've gotten to know the special ed departments here, and I've talked to them. So it's just like, you know, you were talking about creating change, you know, one survivor at a time, you know. And that's the same thing with advocacy, you know, when you're meeting with these groups, whether it's a school district, police, whoever. It's like one person at a time. And the good thing about that is that because the information is timely, you know, to them, they want to do the right thing. They just don't know how, you know. But so by meeting with them, you know, and talking about these issues, it helps to educate them. And, you know, and a lot of the things, you know, we keep coming back to perception, you know, that a lot of the reason why things aren't better for us is because of perception and the stigma and the stereotype that we have to overcome. The only way that we can do that really is through education, and, you know, telling our stories, you know, and showing them that we're not wild-eyed, and we are capable. We can do things. It just takes us a little bit of time to figure it out, you know, and. You know, again, it's just changing everything one person at a time.
Right, one person at a time, like the radio show and all that.
I'd like
all
to
that.
Share something related to what you're talking about. This is Les Paul. One thing with independent living centers do is we go out in the community and we'll go to schools and we'll sometimes talk to the police department. We have an annual thing called Love Shouldn't Hurt at Walton Options.
to prevent domestic violence, and we invite the local authorities, including the ambulance drivers. We'll have the police department. We'll have the sheriff's department. And we not only educate the people who are domestic violence survivors, we educate the police officers who are new and even old ones who may not know the proper way to treat a person in a domestic violence situation, because there's been many people injured and hurt and died in domestic violence situations, and that's where life skills and that's where
right.
community activism comes in. We talk about that a lot, and I've met a lot of people that have had so many brain injuries that have been arrested by a police officer. I'm not putting down the police, and
right.
it's a shame it happens like that.
Yeah,
and you really had a powerful conversation all night. That's why I've been so quiet tonight. I've been just listening. I'm glad you could come on. But,
I think you're right, Ken, about the education, too, because, you know, I wouldn't want the job of a police officer. We got some pretty gnarly, desperate people out there these days, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I wouldn't want that job. If somebody gave me a card, I'd be relieved. Oh, you're just brain injured?
Yeah.
You're not a crackhead? Great.
So and then go educate the officers on how to treat them. On a personal basis, because a lot of times the police officer doesn't, you know, it might be a new police officer just came on the force who didn't get that sensitivity training. We've actually gone out and done it at the police office, at the office of our sheriff's station.
Yeah.
And that's one thing we do. And didn't mean to interrupt everything you're saying, but I was just listening to what you're saying and tied that in with it.
No, that's right, though, because I do the same thing. Well, I'm sure you can tell that I'm passionate about this. You know?
No, not you. No, I'm playing.
but that also helps to sell. You know, I mean, you know, last night, Kim, I thought that was a great analogy that you used about relationships, building a relationship. But when you're a salesperson, I mean, you've got to sell the product. You know, and that's where I think that we as a population of people with brain injuries, our stories are so moving, you know, and our passion by telling them is so strong that we can build a bond there between, you know, whoever it is, whether it's a teacher's association, you know, the police, the sheriff, whoever, you know. And we have to do it, you know. That's what I believe, because, I mean, that's what I've been doing. And out of that, you know, I've been here in Gallup now for 10 years, and I've gotten so much good response from, you know, this from City Hall, the County Commission, whoever, you know, the police department. They know about brain injury, and what they know is positive. See, it's not that stigma and the stereotype of brain injury. It's living with a brain injury.
Exactly.
Because that's what I talk about. You know, I'm not a victim. And boy, I've ruffled a few feathers from doctors who talk about us being victims. Boy,
they're
I let them victims. Know right now that I'm not a victim, you know, that they need to change their perspective. And so, you know.
It's all in how you perceive it. I just wanted to say, you ever watched a wrestling match or a prize fight or something like that, and the one that's the victor, you don't want to be seen as the one being held down. That's how they see us, as we're the one being held back, held back in life, as a failure.
Right,
we're not failures.
Right.
We're winners.
Right.
We're people
that's
that can
right.
bust
no, that's
them
right.
Moves.
Right on.
I mean, we can actually change this whole world by really getting involved. I mean, I challenge everybody listening tonight to help this whole movement on this Brain Injury Radio Show, on the independent living centers, on all the all levels. I challenge everybody listening to go visit your local independent living center and say, hey, do you have a brain injury support group? If they don't, ask if you can start one. Go in there and say, what services do you have for brain injury, since we're talking about brain injury?
And how they can find that is by going to your state. Go on the website through your vocational rehabilitation and look at the State Independent Living Council, because
yes.
the state find out what the State Independent Living Council, or here in New Mexico it's called the Statewide Independent Living Council, that's made up of all the independent living centers in the state. So that's one way that you can identify an independent living center in your area. And what's happened, and why that's important is because we're independent living centers. We're not like an independent living program, because there are assisted living programs that talk about independent living, but they're not independent living centers.
It's actually
it's
the
different.
Opposite when you think
no,
about
just
it.
Just the opposite.
The
yeah, just the opposite. Usually assisted living programs are many nursing homes, you know.
Yeah.
But that's the best way to find an independent living center would be through your state independent living council. You know, and then if they don't provide brain injury services, because some of them have bought into what the industry's been telling them, because the industry brain injury services in America are really based on the medical model, and the medical model is that institutional setting.
Exactly.
Independent living centers are community based,
right.
And there's a big difference. And some of these programs that are out there selling their $1,000 a month services, they say that they're community based, but they're not. They're medical
Absolutely
model.
Not.
Yeah, they're not at all.
I can't say how many hundreds of times in just 1 year I've had people tell me, well, I visited an independent living center, and I said, what are your four core services? Because an independent living
yeah, you gotta
center
have
has
four
core services.
Yeah.
And they
yeah.
said, what are you talking about? They don't
right.
even know what I'm talking about.
Right.
And that's
right.
a sign right there that something's wrong.
Right.
And that it's
right.
not the real deal. It's like somebody
yeah.
put a replica and then change the name around a little bit and say, okay, that's an independent living center. No, it's not.
Right.
It's a fake.
No, it's
a phony.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, then it's probably residential. But, you know,
yeah.
independent living centers are non-residential.
Non-residential.
Yeah.
Right. They just give out the
same. What
things.
Kind of support do they do for the people with brain injuries in there?
Well, we provide peer, well, the four core services, peer support, information and referral, independent living skills training, attendant care. Different centers have a different, but those are the basic four core
yeah.
services. But I do mostly peer support and peer counseling to people with brain injuries. I did a peer support group for about a year, but I just found that because there's issues here in Gallup, and transportation's one of the biggest ones. They just started a public transportation system. It was really just after I started working here about 9 years ago. But see, it just works in Gallup. But we're surrounded by the Navajo Reservation. So, I mean, so that's a whole other world, you know. But I stopped doing the peer support groups because of transportation problems that people had in getting to it. So I found the best use of my time is doing one-on-one peer support and peer counseling.
Guys, can I break in for just a moment, please? We do have another caller on the line. We haven't had the pleasure of meeting before, although I've heard a lot of nice things about her. This is Constance Miller. So, Constance Miller, meet Ken Collins if you haven't, and Craig and Les Paul and Matt and Keith Anthony, and I'm Kim. Good to have you here.
Hi, Constance.
Hey, thanks so much. Hello, hello, everyone.
Hello.
Thank you, Kim, for such fine comments about me.
You bet. Did you have a question or comment for Ken or Craig or?
No, I just, you know, I'm settling in after a long, long TBI council meeting today here in Washington. And it's always so exhausting. And so I thought I would dial up and get a little sunshine, you know, from Brain Injury Radio.
Oh, good. Well, you know, you hear a little reality right now, like you were probably hearing earlier, but if you still wind up being wide awake, we'll be playing some music to chill you out at the end. But it's been a very stimulating conversation about the community independent living approach versus the institutional warehousing approach. And that's kind of been perception is the word that started the show out tonight, and that's kind of the general line of the topic.
Mm-hmm.
How are you feeling, Kim?
Good.
Kim, how are you feeling? Because you weren't well at the beginning. Are you feeling better?
Yeah, I'm feeling better. Thanks for
you sure?
Because yeah.
I've been worried all through the show.
And just for those listeners out there, Constance will be coming on in August on Thursdays on working on the Independent Living Line, and he'll be working with Les Paul there I don't know if
that sounds great.
They decided what Thursday. And Ken, you know, I don't know if you know, we're going to be expanding the show as second network from 5 to 7. And I don't know what time that is. Your time, I think you'd be an incredible asset to be involved too. If you're, you know, something to think about. You know, I don't need an answer right now, but we still have a lot of slots, and we want people to have something to offer the community so they can hear everything that's out there. Because as you know, there's not one fit for all of us.
Yeah, well, that sounds like a better time zone for me. Because I sent Kim an email that I get up real early. I've got 10 dogs, and so I walk them. Work 8 to 10 hours a day. I'm way up past my bedtime right now.
Yeah,
so that five to seven time zone would,
and I was gonna
time frame would be a lot better for me.
Well, let me know. And I'm going to be, I'm going to be up at Brain Injury Camp. I'll be gone as of tomorrow, so I will be gone to about the 22nd. And I haven't been real good. I haven't checked my email in the last week. I'm going to be about 2 weeks behind when I get back, 2.5 weeks on my email, so give me a couple of days, but if you want a spot, just email me and let me know.
Okay. Well, and I can also talk to him about it when you're gone, Craig, because we got a couple people that are doing it once a month or twice a month and not necessarily every week, so there's a few options we can discuss. Yeah.
What's the requirement
we'll talk about it.
For that?
What?
What's the requirements for that once a month, twice a month?
Got to be a survivor.
Uh-huh.
Who can work the studio and has a message, you know, has a message.
Yeah.
I can talk to you
and
about
it don't have
that,
to be a message that we agree with, because if we don't agree with everything, just a survivor and are surviving, and everybody has a perspective that's valuable to somebody. We all have value, and that's kind of what Brain Injury Radio is about.
And the survivor might be a caregiver, too. You know, we might have a caregiver show that's equally weighted. You know, each of us is on one end of the spectrum or the other at one side. We hope more professionals will be participating, but right now all of our hosts are survivors.
The reason we say that real quick is we're going to be expanding our network so that, you know how you guys log into Blog Talk Radio, Brain Injury Radio Network will be its own network, and so we'll have the availability to do unlimited amounts of shows. But, we want to obviously in a progression of the way it's going, to keep it going. My goal is, I think, 24 hours a day, around the world, because, England, we could be listening to somebody in England at 3 in the morning if that's what we wanted to be doing. And I'm sure Keith Anthony's tired of getting up at 3 in the morning.
I don't get up at 3. I stay up all night And where you know it, Craig, to do these shows. And I'm just noticing, now that I'm speaking of staying up, although I'll be doing a show on the 24th of August, that will be 3 a.m. in England, which is the next day, the 25th. So I'll be here on my birthday.
Oh, all right.
So I'll be expecting cake and stuff, champagne or anything you get here. You've got
I'll make it for your birthday show. And that's your birthday show if you got plans, too.
Whoa, you guys, just a minute. I don't want to cut anybody off, but I have to. We will roll into overtime for anybody who's dialed in, but we only got 60 seconds left on the live show. So dial into 424-243-9540. Again, 424-243-9540. If you want to stay a little longer live for overtime, or in the archive, the overtime is recorded. We want to thank you for supporting Brain Injury Radio. We want to thank Brain Injury Radio Network sponsor Gordon Johnson of TBILaw.com. And we appreciate you all being here and listening tonight. And we are officially in overtime. Thanks, you guys. Resume.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to tell you a little story of what happened, what a call I received this morning on the Brain Injury Resource Center hotline. A woman called about her son. He had a brain injury in an automobile accident when he was 9 years old. Currently, he's 40 years old. Apparently, they didn't recognize that he'd suffered a brain injury, and I think they he was diagnosed with hyperactivity, probably ADHD. And subsequently, he was institutionalized in a mental institution, a locked ward. He stayed there for some years and eventually was released. And he's back home with his mother now, and he's developed some new, what appear to be neurological symptoms. And guess what? The talk at this time is to reinstitutionalize him because nobody can figure out what's going on.
Wow.
So that's kind of a counterpoint to independent living.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm sorry, Constance, who called the person or their family, their parent?
His mother, the parent.
Okay.
And do they live in a rural area or...
somewhat rural. So community hospital was about all that was available to them.
Right.
But still,
Yeah.
I mean, it's heart-wrenching. Screwed up. He's tough.
One thing that an independent living center does also is we do a lot of information and referral. If we don't have what you're looking for, we work with you tirelessly to try to help you find some kind of a way to make something work. I mean, we have people that work in the judicial system in our office and go and advocate for children through domestic abuse, through guardian ad litem, all kinds of different things like that. Like if a person comes in and we simply do not have the kind of service they need, or there's no support group for some very rare disability, for example, that you've never heard of. Maybe there's only 15 people in the world that have had, or in the United States that have had it. I'll use that as an example. I'll spend weeks researching that and try my best to help this person out. There's one person, it took me about 6 months to find anything to help them, but finally, when I found it, it's like, oh, dear God, Les Paul, thank you so much. Thank you. I really didn't think I did good at all, but, man, this lady, I thought she was going to kiss my face off because she was so excited. I mean, she's, thank you, I didn't know that existed. And she told me later she found some other people, two other people with that rare disability. And so at an independent living center, and I'm not talking all independent living center, but I think we're a good place to go to in the middle to go to spread out to find resources, because we're a resource, information, and referral packed house full of good stuff. It really is.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, good. Good for you. Anybody else have anything?
I was just thinking, just as Constance, again, just to pick up just a tiny bit more on what I said earlier, it took the kid's mother, you know, dozens of years to figure out that her son had suffered a brain injury. She just bought into what she's told.
You know, I think there's another element at play, and I could give a personal example going on in my family right now, but I won't. I'll suffice to say that not everyone is emotionally equipped to be in a position of a caregiver.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very true.
That
right.
doesn't excuse it. That doesn't excuse it, you know. If it's family, you're supposed to do this, you're supposed to do that. There's an expectation we have of people, you know, who have a baby that might have issues or in this situation you're talking about. But I try not to judge it, and it's hard because sometimes the caregivers seem cruel and callous and the survivor seems like the victim. And it looks like such an ugly situation, but the truth of the matter is that a lot of caregivers get as sick caregiving in their own group of people as the survivors do, and some just flat-ass aren't emotionally cut out or willing to go down that path, and it's sad, but real.
How strong is the support groups for the caregivers? Is that like a 12-step program or something? Or
no, no, something like this, Matt. Yeah. But it would be hosted by a caregiver, and it would be a caregiver program.
But is there other sites out there for them? Is that what you want to turn? I don't know. I was just curious.
Well, yeah, there are caregiving groups that are starting to get together, and basically they're just like a support group for folks with brain injury. People getting together to share issues and problems that are going on, and hear from other people about how to deal with those situations. Constance, it seems like now your mention about the guy who was institutionalized when he was 9. My guess is that he would have a funding source. Because here in New Mexico and the developmental disability world, the folks that are injured with a brain injury before age 18, they go on a developmental disability waiver. So I would ask the mom or someone in that family if he's on the waiver, on the DD waiver, because if he is, then he will have the support, the means, because if they're talking about reinstitutionalizing him again, that's not free. Somebody pays, and it's the government that pays. And so my guess would be that even at 42, he's still on the waiver, and so he would have funding to be able to look for what kind of resources there are in that area or that state, that, you know, he wouldn't have to go back into an institution, because there's a lot of providers out there, and it's just, you know, finding which ones are available. And, you know, because there's a lot of family members that are in that same boat. Their kid with a brain injury is now 40 or 50 years old, and they're getting ready to need care themselves, the family members. So, I mean, that's a whole other topic. I mean, when I was working, there were several people that I met that, you know, their son, he was like 50 now, and they're 80. You know, and the folks in the developmental disability world, you know, their sons or daughters with mental retardation or Down syndrome or whatever, you know, those kids got to be taken care of, you know. And maybe the ARC, if there's an ARC, you know, in their area, they could contact the ARC to see if there is. I mean, I hate to put people, you know, direct people to nursing, I mean, to group homes, but group homes, you know, some of them are good, most, you know, but there are resources that it sounds like this person has available to him if the family member just, you know, or like what Les was saying, you know, contact an independent living center, because they can, you know, that's what we do with information and referral. That's what we get
exactly.
paid to do is
that's
to
what
help people.
The person
like that,
needs.
You know?
Yeah,
yeah,
that I think that's puts the nail on the head, is going to consult with someone who knows the ropes.
Right, right.
Exactly.
Right.
Could I?
Yeah, well, just to follow up just a tiny bit here. At this juncture, the young man has Medicare, and he's
okay.
been receiving Social Security disability benefits for the past 3 years.
Wow.
And also at this point, the mother is willing to fight to keep him out of an institution.
Uh-huh.
And her primary concern is to find a neurologist who will really look into his case and maybe also evaluate his medication. But it's
good
a
luck.
Tragic situation, you know, when a child suffers a brain injury and, you know, at the age of
yeah.
9 is when
right.
kids really start pushing away from their parents.
Wow.
It's a hardwired thing. It's not a willful
yeah.
thing, you know.
Right.
So, and then when that happens and you know, you get a brain injury on top of that, it becomes a nearly intolerable situation. So,
and when y'all are taking these calls, do you not have a list of referral services?
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
That these
Absolutely.
People can call, because certainly we can be empathetic and hear this story, but, you know, we're not lawyers, doctors, candlestick makers. We're one survivor
mm-hmm.
talking to another, and sometimes all we can do is listen and refer.
Yes. Yes, you know, this conversation today was really rather brief, because actually since, you know, she'd heard from a neurologist and has an appointment tomorrow.
Okay.
So she's going to see how that works out, and if necessary, call back. But like I said, she declared her intention to fight to keep him out. You know, if he's 40, she has to at least be
yeah.
around 60, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So she has that, you know, kind of I'm getting old thing going on.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
to be close
right.
to him. So,
hopefully
you know,
the neurologist will be helpful, and if not, and she calls back, I'd send her to independent living for sure.
That was going to be my next comment. I'll probably call her and have her contact her local independent living center for additional resources, because this young man is going to be on his own at some
yeah.
point.
Yeah.
That's right. On the other end of that, as an example, just this Thursday, I worked with a man of 40, I believe he's 48, 49 years old, and his mother, who is 80,
mm.
and he's a traumatic brain injury survivor, and he'd
mm.
never been to a support group. He didn't know what independent living was. He didn't know what disability advocacy was. I mean, he just had been left
oh,
out
yeah. Yeah.
since his injury, and he was just lost.
Yeah.
They came mm-hmm. and met with me for what seems like 3 hours, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And I was appalled at what I realized he didn't know, because no one had helped him. And his
mm-hmm.
mother was very independent-minded but didn't know where to go. She was, even though she
right.
was 80, she was sharp as a tack. Wonderful lady.
Yeah.
I enjoy it.
Nobody
actually
tells
came in
you
on
where
my,
to go. The doctor
yeah.
came
in
tell
on my
you
day.
Where to
oh,
go.
Yeah.
Could I come in?
Yeah.
Sure.
Just quickly let you know that the show is still live if anybody wants to call in. because I extended the time, and I've just tested it by dialing in myself. I'm on my telephone here. You might
okay,
be hearing
I wasn't sure why it gave me the countdown.
I've got the mic live as well, so let me just hang up the phone, and you can probably still hear me on my mic, can't you?
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
No. And I've got an interesting story to tell, a bit of a tangent for this, if you want to hear it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I have met recently, in fact, a few weeks ago, I won't say any names because they've spoken to me in confidence, so I can't tell you their names. But I met a young lady in the street a few weeks ago who was a student teacher. She approached me out of the blue, asked if she could interview me. So I said, sure, go ahead. And I was able to give her some tips about how she was doing, because I'm an expert in hypnosis and communication. And she started telling me all about herself, and she told me about her boyfriend who's been in coma for 14 months. And yesterday I had a call from her mother, or from his mother, who wanted to speak with me. And it's amazing that she's a hypnotherapist as well. But she called me for my insight, because she wants him to come out of the coma, of course. And it now looks like I'm going to be going to meet him. He's been in a coma for 14 months, and it may be that I'm the missing link. And with any luck, I'll be bringing him out of that coma. I hope I'm not talking pie in the sky here. Because I think that when a chain of events like that links up, it happens for a reason. I don't believe in accidents. So, to meet somebody out of the blue at random like that, and I'm a coma survivor, and she knows someone who's in coma, and the mother is a hypnotist, and I'm a hypnotist, and a teacher, and it was a teacher who stopped me. It's just too much of a coincidence, isn't it?
He's also
a guitarist. This guy is supposed to be in deep coma, and the doctors and nurses, they say there's no hope for him. There's nothing there. And yet, when the parents talk to him and when the friends talk to him, he's responding.
But the hospital won't acknowledge this.
I don't think he's in coma at all. I think he's locked in.
And he would respond to guitar music then, too.
Yeah.
That's something he liked, music therapy.
If you put a guitar in his hands, he forms the chords with his left hand. And they'll say,
he's close.
Yeah, he's not in a coma.
Yeah.
He's been that way for 14 months. They're doing crazy things to him, though. He curls his arm up and he curls his fingers up in a fist, and the hospital people are forcibly straightening his arm and his fingers, and that's going to damage the muscles, isn't it?
Wow.
Well, there should be range of motion, though. He should be given range of motion, That does help him,
That same thing that happened with that guest of mine, Dale Hayes, whose wife was tossed into a nursing home who was making progress, same story as that. Her fingers started digging into her palm.
That's
that grip bad enough that they gave her surgery and severed that tendon.
That's appalling.
Yeah.
It's appalling that she was digging a wound into her hand.
Oh, yeah,
into the hand, like one of those stress balls.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
but her Medicaid had run out, and so Craig explained to me one night the concept of threshold, and this woman didn't meet the threshold. Some bureaucrat pencil neck came in and put her at a number right under the threshold to be able to continue getting help, and she was responding in ways like Keith Anthony is talking about, and she didn't make the grade, and they put her into a nursing home where she's been the last 8 years, and this surgery, Dale keeps in contact since he's a musician who lets me play some of his music on my show and told me the story about his wife. I wound up having him as a guest. He stays in touch now. Same thing this is good for is people touch our peripheral, and they find out things they didn't know before. Some people in our audience and me were able to give Dale some resources that may or may not be of huge help. I know one was, and it had been 8 years, and he hadn't gotten any information like that, but his wife did have to go through that surgery. They felt like she was digging into her hand, causing big wounds, and that the consequence might be worse. And she doesn't qualify for treatment. She qualifies to be a cauliflower in an old folks' home.
Yeah, geez, that's so sad.
That's terrible.
It's bad, boy.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if you've got any prayers, then do them. I can't say his name because the lady spoke to me in confidence, and I can't break that confidence. But there's a young man in a London hospital, shall we say. I can't tell you which hospital, but if you've got any prayers, pray for him, because he needs it. And when I get to face him, which I'm sure I will, I need all the help I can get. So prayers.
Well, you'll have those prayers behind you, and certainly it can't be worse, and it could be a miracle. You don't know till you try it, but the person's not going to be worse off. That's for sure.
Yeah. Well, maybe he needs a change of scene. So it's just the fact that I'm something totally different. Maybe that would bring him out. You know, you just never know. But you got to try these things. The problem with the hospitals is they don't try anything, from what I've seen.
Yeah, I know.
They got that medical model going on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're up to their eyeballs in it. My friends, I'm gonna have to go. It's late here, but I call my mom, who has Parkinson's. She was diagnosed about 4 years ago, and I call her every night. And I didn't have a chance. I got it from my nap and called in. So I really need to get off the line and call my mom. So
I really want to thank you for being a guest tonight with me. And we'll talk about show, and we'll talk about other guesting, and hopefully, you know, together we can make a difference. But I appreciate the way our deal has turned around the last 24 hours, and that you were willing to come on the show tonight and stay up so much later past your bedtime. So thank you so much.
Well, and you're welcome, and I really appreciate the opportunity that this has given me to shed some more light, especially talk about some of the history. See, nobody talks about this history. They don't know about it. And, you know, we've really come a long way, you know. We've got a lot further to go, but we have come a long way. And it really is, because of these discussions like this, you know, because it's not that hard to figure it out. These companies and these powers that be that do nothing but promote this, the stigma and the stereotype, you know, we're overcoming that, you know.
And we need to remind people we're not a dollar sign.
Yeah, well, and it's because of these kind of discussions like this. And so I'm really enthusiastic, and I want to be a part of this. And so with that, I'm going to say good night for now.
Okay. Good night, Ken.
Bye-bye, Ken. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Ken.
Oh, yeah.
Bye, Ken.
Bye-bye,
Ken. Bye-bye. Yeah.
Could I just tell you, Ken?
Ken is just off the air. Okay.
Kim, are you there?
Yes.
Oh, the stream is showing 7 minutes left, but I think that it will switch over to extra time, so you should have another hour, I'm thinking. I may be wrong, but I'm looking, probably you've got another hour if you want it.
Are you there?
Anybody there?
Hello. I'm here.
Well,
did you knock her out when you sold that other hour?
it's just an option. Because you seem to be in full swing with Ken. I didn't expect Ken to be leaving. Oh, Ken is still on the board, I see. But now he's gone. And it's good to have you on, Constance. That was nice of you to come
so
on.
Thanks so much. Yeah, and I get very sleepy. So I might have to buzz off in a few minutes myself.
And I have to leave at 7 o'clock in the morning to go to the Brain Injury Association of South Carolina conference in Columbia, so I'm going to soon have to sign off. But it's been an awesome guest tonight, a wonderful show, Kim. Is she there?
Where is Kim? Yeah.
I don't know what's happened to Kim. She's
Sometimes the microphone gets turned off.
Keith, I did do what I always do. How long did you say there is?
Well, there's 5 minutes of this show left, but this is live show. And
right.
So it will most likely switch over to an hour of extra time.
Okay, well, I think I'm going to call the show at that point. Because it looks like most people are going to have to go to bed, and this is my third show this week. And
that's right.
Pinch hitting. I did the switchboard for 3 hours.
You're a fantastic
hours.
Pinch hitter, Kim. You are.
Matt. Well, it was a wonderful show, you guys. If you don't mind, I'm just going to close it out. And Keith Anthony, the only reason I kind of wondered, because when I interrupted and closed the show earlier, it's because that 90-second countdown started, the 90, 60, whatever. And my clock showed we rolled into overtime then. But in any case,
I went in and extended it just in case you wanted. That took us back live to air.
Oh, okay.
Smart like
well,
that.
Yeah, cool. Well, it looks like a lot of people are going to be needing to go to get up early. I see Craig was one of them, too. He's going to be out of communication. Yes?
He's
for 10.
Be at camp.
Yes, that's right. He's going to be at camp. And
Camp
TBI. Camp TBI, that's right. So he's... he will be incommunicado, lucky guy. He gets to be around no technology and soak up some quiet time. But if you guys don't mind, I'm going to mute you and close the show out. And
can I just say one more thing? Thank you very much for the show, and I got to share my anniversary with you guys. Thank you for a good show tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt, and I'm so glad you came. You're one of the reasons, situations like yours are one of the reasons I come and do these shows. So thanks for calling in and letting us share this important moment with you. I want to thank everybody who participated in the show tonight, whether you were listening or calling in. I want to thank Ken Collins for coming on as my guest. On very short notice, I think this was a great program. This is actually Fantastic Frank's show. I encourage you to go to his website, iamfantasticfrank.com, where he has his ebook for sale. And he will be hopefully having a good conference down in Vegas over the weekend and have a great tidbits that he learned to tell you all about next week. But this is your Tuesday night host, Kim Justice, wanting to tell you to have a great weekend. Thank you for supporting Brain Injury Radio. And thanks to Gordon Johnson, attorney at law, for being our sponsor at Brain Injury Radio Network. And I'm going to close the show in the usual way. And that's with something I believe we all have. And that is a guardian angel. So this is Guardian Angel by Leah West. I encourage you to check her out, too, at leahwest.com. Good night, everybody, and God bless.
Someone who's been waiting for you.